Do you think life is simpler as time evolves? For some, it can be more complicated when facing issues about health, estate plans, probate, long-term care, and more. That's why attorney CPA Joe Cordell hosts Elder Talk with Tucker Allen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Here's attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Welcome to another episode of Elder Talk. We would surely fail you as a show intended to give you useful information if we did not give some time and attention to the subject of coronavirus. We know that this is dominating many of your thoughts. Yeah. We know that you're seniors. We realize that this show is dedicated to being helpful, informative, and lastly, but importantly, entertaining. So we feel that it's imperative that we take some time and talk about coronavirus.
It's critical. And what we're seeing is unprecedented.
Yeah. I mean, I'm 62 years old, and I don't remember anything like this, even with the previous health scares, H1N1.
SARS.
Yeah.
I don't remember anything like this. And just seeing the trickle-down effect and with all the cancellations.
Yeah. Going to restaurants. Even in St. Louis, I'm noticing a difference when I go in a restaurant. It's not empty like I hear some of them are in New York and on the West Coast, but you notice a difference.
You do. And going to the grocery store, you know, I just was going for some hand soap the other day. I could barely find it. There was maybe two or three left on the shelves.
Well, you know, I feel like I have to run to the store and get some toilet paper because I'm told that everyone's getting I don't know what it is about toilet paper that's so important in this crisis, but I think that would be less important than some other things you might want to have in your house.
Yeah, I would think so.
But it's funny, all this attention to toilet paper. The bottom line is people are panicking.
Mm-hmm.
And for our audience, for people who are older, granted, this is a little more grave in magnitude than it is for many. I mean, the possibility of death for someone who gets this and is older with a presumably compromised immune system, as well as various other health concerns that could contribute to something becoming a fatal disease, including type 2 diabetes, I hear, among many other things that are, of course, much more common in older people.
Right, right. So seniors are much more vulnerable and at risk with this virus. Coronavirus has been around a long time, but this is a new strain.
Yeah, yeah. And boy, is it incredibly prone to spread. It apparently has a transmission rate that's higher to, for example, the flu, the common flu as we've dealt with for many years. And for which people are very quick to point out how many people die each year, which apparently is over 100,000, which is a big number. But it doesn't threaten the economy. It doesn't threaten to take people down in the way that and in the numbers that this coronavirus does.
Right. Right. So we are in uncharted waters.
We are. We are. So what we should do is talk about the things that we know the most about. And many of you are aware that Tucker Allen and Cordell Planning Partners merged some time ago. So many of you heard me during the first couple years of this show talking about Cordell Planning Partners. Well, now Tucker Allen encompasses Cordell Planning Partners clientele, which is elder law oriented, as well as just estate planning, which includes planning for elders as well as planning for those who are younger. But I want to use this opportunity for Tucker Allen to show its commitment to the community and to this audience in particular. And I think that there's no better and more helpful way to do that than to place into people's hands something that can make a big difference in their lives during a time like this. And I'm talking specifically about a durable power of attorney. You all have heard me talk about it on this show before. You've heard me rant, really. I guess that's the word. My daughters might agree with that. But yet you've heard me emphasize to you how important it is that you have in place a document that in the event that you become disabled or you're incapacitated for a period of time to where you can't run your life and make decisions for you, for example, when you're very ill, then it's critical that someone have the authority to act on your behalf, whether it's your children, your adult children, whether it's your spouse, mm-hmm. a sibling, whoever it is, it's critical that you have someone who's available to act for you and do the things in your life that need to be done, including giving authority for medical care, including be able to access your bank account, your safe deposit box, et cetera. But you may want to place some fencing around some of those areas, and that's not unusual. Often we do want boundaries. So no two people's durable power of attorney is going to be exactly alike, or at least there won't be only a few variations. It's true that there's not an infinite number of variations of durable powers of attorney.
But it's not a one-size-fits-all.
That's correct. There are multiple sizes. But the bottom line is that we want to make this available to people. And toward that end, Tucker Allen has made the decision that as to people who are listening to this show today, if you come into the office Monday morning between 9 a.m. to 11, if you come into our Kelwood, our town and country office, which you want to give that address?
Yes, yes. That's at 600 Kelwood Parkway, Suite 300. And that's, of course, in Chesterfield, 63017. And again, between 9 and 11, Monday through Friday, no appointment necessary. This is a public service, no charge.
Yeah, and I don't want to confuse people. It's located probably, in some senses, the word in town and country because it's at the intersection of 40 and 141. But I guess they have the zip code of Chesterfield. So in any case,
yes,
it's easy to find. It's at the intersection of 40 and 141. And we will have there, in addition to an attorney, we'll have a notary so that we can prepare a document for you then and there and have you walk out of there with it notarized and effective that will give you a tool to take care of you in the event that something happens. Remember what the alternative is. I've talked about it before, so I won't go into detail here, but I just want to remind you that those of you who become very sick and cannot make decisions for yourself and decisions have to be made, there's only one other way to do that. And that's for somebody to go to court, go to probate court, and get a guardianship or conservatorship declared. And that is expense, it's time, it's delayed.
A lot of challenges.
It invites conflict among family members. I mean, if you have a perfectly harmonious family, maybe that won't happen, but it's so unnecessary.
Right.
I mean, so much of your money will be spent on something that Tucker Allen is willing to provide you free. And there's no strings attached. There's no gimmick here. Just simply show up, bring your identification. We will have a lawyer available, and we'll have a notary available. And this is free of charge, and you'll leave with a document called a durable power of attorney that will allow you to have the peace of mind of knowing that if something happens to you where you're incapacitated for some period of time, short or long, you'll have somebody who you've chosen to make decisions for you with rules that you've created, with those parameters of that authority that you've chosen.
And we certainly don't want to create a panic, but with this very real health threat, I can't think of a time that, you know, it's more vital to do this.
It is. It's important. So hopefully people will take me up on that. Again, this is Monday. So this Monday morning, 2 days from now, between 9 a.m. and 11 a.m., all you do is just show up with your identification, and Tucker Allen will see to it that you leave with a durable power of attorney. So let's talk about some other things, Jill. We know that a number of the people who listen to this show, as well as people who listen to this show, their loved ones, are in some sort of, I hate this word, some sort of institutional environment. Let me say a community living in some sort of housing community.
Right.
And that there are independent living facilities. There's so many variations on this. There's assisted living. There's skilled care, semi-skilled care. And not all of them are equally safe environments, given the threat of something such as a coronavirus. They're not all equally safe. Although I'll tell you, the ones that I've heard about, I'm impressed with. And let me say to those of you who may feel some frustration that perhaps there are barriers that have been erected to your having access to your loved ones, or lots of rules where you're having to go in and submit to tests, or you're having to wash your hands repeatedly while you're there. I mean, those are all very helpful rules. Remember the source of this. The source of this is a virus that is especially fatal to people who are older.
Right.
And so these facilities are doing the right thing when they're creating those protective layers for everyone inside that community. Because remember the nature of that, it's kind of like a cruise ship.
Yeah.
I mean, once a virus gets in, I mean, you have a fertile environment for
you
it
do.
To spread. And so in order to avoid that, just like with a cruise ship, you can't allow one incident, because if one incident slips through,
yeah,
then you probably have a crisis on your hands within the facility.
Yeah. And it's in the best interest of your loved ones that they do have these safeguards in place. And, you know, they do this same thing with the flu. So this really isn't any different.
No, you're right. It's not. But let's talk about, though, the possibility that someone feels that their loved one is in an environment in a community housing arrangement, which is not especially safe. Let's entertain that possibility for a minute, because there are a few of those out there. I'm suggesting that before you consider rehousing a loved one, that you think carefully about that. It's probably not a good idea unless you've seen something in that community environment that you believe is not as it should be. I mean, if there's some specific failure on their part, then I get it.
Right, right. If there's something really serious.
Yeah. So unless you know of something specific, unless you have a concern that you point to that would justify it, I would be reluctant to have a loved one removed from a community environment just because you think this is an environment that would be hospitable to the spread if it ever got in.
Right.
Because I think that very aggressive measures are being taken by virtually all of these facilities.
Yeah.
I mean, they recognize what's at stake. I mean, the legal liability here, many people talk about the liability that some of the cruise lines will face
mm-hmm.
because, you know, they've invited people into this contained world and so they assume a lot of responsibility. I would say whatever that liability is in that circumstance would be at least twice as much for someone who has been placed in a long-term care facility, because those people by definition are not capable of taking care of themselves, and they're placed there in order for them to be protected and cared for. So in that environment, I would say the bar is extraordinarily high from a legal standpoint
right.
for the owners and the managers to take extraordinary steps to protect their safety. And I think from what facilities I'm familiar with, they're doing that. However, let's allow for the possibility that someone knows of a facility where they think it's not safe. Maybe
right.
someone within the environment has in fact come down with this, whether it was the facility's fault or not. In that case, you know, rehousing is not to be completely ruled out, I would argue, in those cases. I'm just arguing that it should be a very reluctant remedy.
Yeah. I mean, it has to be something very, very serious to take that kind of step.
That chance. Because
yeah.
remember, you're undertaking a lot of responsibility. You're saying that, yes, I can protect them. I can guard our doors. I can guard our contact from the outside world coming in. And remember, that includes you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're coming in and out of that house, that includes your children. It includes anybody else, any guests you have that are coming in and out of that house.
You got to create your own self-quarantine.
Yeah, exactly.
You would. And you would think, you know, in a facility, they're going to be much more professional, much more skilled at that than we are.
Yeah, yeah. They have people whose jobs depend upon their ability to consult with professionals, to hire professionals.
Their expertise, sure.
Yeah. So, again, I know some people I'm familiar with cases where they have rehoused a loved one who is in a community environment just because they didn't feel comfortable with it and they felt they could do better at home. I'm not critical of that decision, but I just would argue that you turn to that very slowly, that you
mm-hmm.
you really require some evidence, in my judgment, to support that decision. Now, what other things can we mention here? We know that washing hands are huge. So I hate to say things that sound so unimaginative and elementary on this show, but sometimes it's the elementary things that need to be returned to.
Yeah.
Was it the basics? Was it Vince Lombardo that supposedly started every season, you know, so you'd have some freshmen in as well as others. And he would begin every season holding up a football in his hand and saying, "Gentlemen, this is a football." And his theory was that if you focus on the fundamentals, that
mm-hmm.
often the other things fall in place. Too many times you lose sight of the fundamentals. And in this case, you can think about a lot of complicated things when you think about a virus and what to do about it. But if you keep coming back to those three or four essentials, then you're probably going to be okay. And one of those would have to be the hand washing practices.
Right. And to thoroughly wash your hands, not just run it through a few seconds, to thoroughly wash your hands. What do they say? Singing happy birthday.
I never heard that.
You never heard that? No. Yeah. If you sing happy birthday while you're washing your hands, you've thoroughly washed your hands.
You know, that probably comports with the rule that I heard from CDC, which is 20 seconds warm water. So it probably takes about 20 seconds to sing happy birthday.
Sure.
I've never heard
a lot
that.
Of people in public restrooms singing happy birthday.
Anyway, so that, you know, it's not imaginative. But remember, if you do that handful of, no pun intended, that handful of essentials, mm-hmm. then you're probably going to be okay. What else is there? Remember social spacing. Boy, is that phrase going to become common.
Yes, social spacing.
I expect to be so tired of that phrase.
Yeah.
But it's becoming a theme. It's a theme especially in New York State and in Washington State. But I suspect in a lot of others and within 3 to 4 months. So social spacing is huge. And the effect of that means that you're precluded from having any significant event that involves a crowd.
Right.
We've planned to attend the Kentucky Derby, and we've bought some very expensive tickets, which we bought in January. And I'm wondering, you know, are we going to see this money ever come back?
Right.
Because I'm pretty confident the Kentucky Derby is not going to be held as it usually is. Now, I would expect, incidentally, that it be held. That's my bet. But I've not heard anything yet from Churchill Downs. But
sure.
I'm betting that the event will be held, but nobody will attend it.
Just out of fear.
Which means that people who bought tickets, that's just something that we're all going to have to live with, whether we get our money back or not. But I do think it's the right decision. But I don't see them canceling the event. I see them turning to the remedy that the NBA has, that I think some of professional baseball may end up using, where you do have events, but you just don't have audience in attendance. Who would have bet? If we'd been having this conversation 3 months ago, even 2 months ago,
yeah.
and we suggested that in 8 weeks, this is what you're going to see happening, people would have said, no.
No way.
At least not in America.
No. And it's just been, the past couple of weeks, it's gone crazy.
Yeah, and it seems to escalate every day.
Right. You were hearing one cancellation after another.
And my wife and I were going to go on a Dave Ramsey cruise, which I really like Dave Ramsey. I think his suggestions are wonderful. He is going to have a number of financial experts on the cruise, and it was supposed to leave in a week. So it was something we kind of looked forward to. But they waited and waited and waited before they canceled. My wife and I were saying, you know, should we cancel this cruise? And we're thinking, well, but if it were unsafe, they would probably initiate the cancel, and we'd really like to go.
Sure.
So we were dragging our feet, and then they made the decision for us a few days ago. They sent out the email in which they informed us it had been canceled. They're very apologetic, et cetera. Apparently, the people who put on these events, you know, whoever those agencies are, there's often, at least in this occasion, there's often not insurance available. And I know there wasn't in South by Southwest that
okay.
was canceled in Austin. I mean, you're talking tens of, maybe hundreds of millions of dollars that were invested by all of these companies coming from around the world. That's an international show now.
Yeah.
So Disney had come in, and Disney had created this large production in which they were going to have multi-graphic screens and all of this technology, these pyrotechnics, but they end up canceling very close to the event because they were so reluctant to cancel. There's not insurance covering these things. Many of us think, Lloyd's of London has it handled.
Right.
But for whatever reason, the events that I'm hearing about, there's not insurance covering these.
Mm.
So the loss to the city of Austin.
The revenue loss.
I mean, to many companies internationally.
Right.
So that with the Dave Ramsey thing, there was, you know, they said in this email that this sponsoring company was out literally millions of dollars out of pocket. And we're not talking about a huge company. So
that's nothing to sneeze at.
No, it could dent their ability to to go forward. So some balance sheets can withstand things like that and some can't. And that's also a product of what industry you're in. So We know that life is different now, and we know that we're going to have to make some changes. But I do expect this to improve in a couple of quarters.
We hope so.
Yeah, but we don't know. So in the meantime, we need to do these fundamentals and washing hands, social spacing.
Yeah.
You know, we're just going to have to...
Hand sanitizer.
We're going to have to refrain from gathering in these places that we normally would. And some churches have canceled. I heard, was it... I think the Mormon Church internationally
yes.
canceled all of their services.
Yes, that's correct. I just heard that, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, there's been no discussion in the church we attend. I'm sure it's going to be a person-by-person decision whether to do that, but I understand the importance of not contributing to the spread of this virus.
Yeah, and I think, again, it is person-to-person, and I was just talking to someone today that their 93-year-old mother does not want to go to church right now because of this.
Well, and you know, now we have technology, and I think technology is another important component of adapting to these circumstances and making them more adaptable than they would have been 100 years ago.
Right. There's so, other ways to communicate.
Yeah. So on the one hand, people might point out that things spread faster now than they did 100 years ago because, you know, we're more of an international community than we were at that time. That's true. But also now we have the ability to isolate ourselves and function with technology in a way that we could not have many years ago. So many people are working from home. They're continuing to get paid. There are ways that companies can adapt and still keep their doors open without having people gather in the way they traditionally did. I see that happening even with our firm. You know, we have to have some flexibility. Cordell & Cordell has offices around the country and in the UK, and we realize that it's an office-by-office thing in terms of how attorneys can adapt. But we know now that a lot of the work that attorneys do can be done at home.
Now, yeah.
And even interaction with clients. You know, now, I mean, Skype is a wonderful thing.
Skype, FaceTime.
FaceTime, there are lots of options to have a face-to-face technological meeting with clients. And courtrooms, so far you show up for that, but you don't need everybody there for that unless there's a trial. So I suspect that many people will participate in meetings such as a settlement conference or a pretrial conference.
Mm-hmm.
Clients probably don't need to be there as long as they're currently available. You can even have documents signed remotely.
Right.
So many things can be done now without people having to be physically gathered in a single place than would have been the case just, well, 20 years ago.
And, you know, in situations where your loved one is in a senior living facility, you can use this technology to communicate with them. Now, yes, maybe some of those residents don't have that tech savvy, but there's staff, I'm sure, that would be more than happy to help them.
Yeah, yeah. And while we're on the subject of technology, I would argue that one of the things that you should have on that short list of things available to you during a time like this is some sort of emergency notification device. I mean, I don't know what form that could take. It could be worn as a necklace. It could be a bracelet. It could be on your iPhone. And I know that the iWatch certainly has a feature that's a fall detection feature. There are now so many options out there. When you go online and just look under emergency alert devices, I mean, you see so many options out there. Some things you pay for, you send a fee in monthly and it's monitored by a live person. Others simply have a notification that automatically occurs, such as a phone call or a text to somebody that you've designated. And that, if you do it that way, then you don't have to have a live monitoring system that will incur a monthly charge.
Right. And this, what I'm looking at right now, this personal emergency response device, and it's a watch, $65.50, which isn't bad.
$65.50. And
mm-hmm.
What's that called?
It's called Personal Emergency Response Device, but the brand name is TechSpree.
TechSpree. You know, when you do a search under this, there are so many of these options that come up. There's a V-Alert device, which is a
bracelet.
Yes, I see
that.
So there are so many of these. If you just do a search online, you want to check, of course, I don't know if you have Consumer Reports that has done a rating of these devices. I think they have, but I don't know if it's within the last year, and you'd want something very current. But you can certainly look at ratings from customers. I'm a little skeptical of those. Amazon's doing better to police that. I think Yelp does a much better job. But the bottom line is you do want to do some research. I mean, what good is a live monitoring device, for example, if you fall and you press it and nobody responds?
Right. There's Blue Star, and that's $39.99.
What is Blue Star?
It is, and I'm bringing it up, it is a device.
Is it wearable?
Yes, it is a wearable device.
And that's critical because, I mean, while it's good to have that feature on your phone, which you can easily do without even incurring an additional charge, at least you can with Apple, which is what I know most about. But the problem is if you don't have your phone with you. So I'm reluctant to endorse the phone as the remedy to this just because so often people have phones, especially the larger phones, that they don't have with them all the time.
Right, right. But it's really amazing what these devices can do. When you see people with diabetes, it can alert a loved one if while you're sleeping and your blood sugar falls too low.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, some of those features, too, are also present with the iWatch regarding if your heart rate changes in a certain way, then it will give you a warning or a third party, a notification. So the bottom line here is that technology can be harnessed to allow you to be separated socially mm-hmm. and at the same time to be safe. But we have to keep in mind that this isn't going to last. I think that we may look back as soon as 3 to 4 months and see this as something that's not been eradicated, but something that we no longer fear as if it's an impending tsunami. Instead, it's something that'll be under control and mm-hmm. the rates of transmission will be much, much lower. So I think it's a lot of this uncertainty that's driving this right now. And once we have certainty, even though we still have the virus, I think it'll make a big difference in how people feel about this. And I think in the stock market. Jeez, the stock market has really been hit hard by all this.
Yes.
I don't think that's going to change soon.
No, that may take a while to rebound. But I do think, things will calm down.
Okay, let's take a quick break. Then we'll come back in a few minutes. We'll talk some more about some of the legal things you need to be aware of during a time like this. Back in a moment with Elder Talk.
You're listening to Elder Talk with Tucker Allen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. And now, attorney CPA Joe Cordell.
Well, we're back with Elder Talk. We're discussing the coronavirus. And we would be certainly remiss on a show sponsored by Tucker Allen.
Right.
If we failed to talk a little more about the legal aspect. Now, I know that many of you already have in place wills. You have some sort of estate planning. This is really, though, a time to think more seriously about that. You know, we don't want to think of this disease in grave terms. But at the same time, we know that in an environment like this, whatever our chances before this virus of dying in the next several years, the odds are a little greater now if you're older. And that's not something we want to talk about, but I think it's important that we recognize when we're living in a little more dangerous environment.
I think it's a good wake-up call, too, because if it wasn't this virus, it could be something else. And that's why it's important to have something in place.
Yeah, and that's the reason I don't like to frame this as a coronavirus response. Yes, maybe the coronavirus is the stimulus to mm-hmm. us recognizing that, you know, we're very human, we're frail, we're subject to getting diseases.
Don't know what a day could bring.
I mean, so as we age, we just have to accept that. So it means that it's imperative that we think more seriously about having these critical components in place. The good news about estate planning, contrary to what some people might suggest when you listen to talk shows in which there's these long, protracted, these complicated discussions about how to draft correctly or plan directly your estate, I can tell you that the fundamentals from a lawyer standpoint are just 3 to 4 items. And one of those, as we've talked about before, is a durable power of attorney. We know that that's a critical component. That's what needs to be in place for the balance of your life. That's not something that helps you when you're gone.
No.
Except to the extent that it preserves your estate while you're alive. But still, a durable power of attorney is a critical component because we don't know how long we might be disabled or we might be incapacitated while we're alive. We don't know that. But we know that those periods are longer now than they were 20, 30, 40 years ago. And that is in part, ironically, the result of progress. The good news is about estate planning is that it doesn't have to be complicated. While it can be made complicated, of course, it can be very simple. I mean, there are just a few core components, all of which we talked about before, that once you attend to them in some way, even if you don't attend to them with perfection, then you're covered. We've all heard that phrase where perfection is the enemy of good enough.
Right.
In other words, often people simply don't get something done because they don't believe they can get it done perfectly or as well as they would like. And I would argue that in this environment, what's important is that we go ahead and put something in place. I mean, not because we expect to get a fatal illness, but because we know it's possible and we know that those odds are a little greater now than maybe they would have been a few months ago.
It's just being proactive.
That's a good way to think about it. So being a good steward means that you have in place a durable power of attorney, which we'll come back to in a few moments, but Tucker Allen can solve that for you without charge on Monday. So that critical component can be met. But another critical component is having in place either a will or a trust, and probably both. A trust allows you to avoid having your assets go through probate. It allows you to avoid the costs of probate and the lawyers and the various things that might gin up at your death that can be avoided entirely. So I think to the extent that you have in place a device that avoids probate, that's a good thing. Trusts do that. The reason I said a will, too, is a will is just kind of a net that sets below your trust, that in the event that you have something that you didn't identify, you didn't place in your trust, or you chose to not put in your trust, then that's okay. There's no disaster there because instead the net captures the fall. It captures those items that were not in the trust, and the instructions in the will are simply to take those items and place them in the trust.
So it supplements, would you say?
Supplements, backs up. Yeah, it
okay.
backs up your trust. So these are very simple things. It does mean, though, that when you create the trust that you put some things in it. So I'm listing that as an additional item on the to-do list. Too often people think that when they check the box that they've created a trust that they're done. But a trust means you've created a container. It could be a beautiful container. It could be a marvelous, ingenious container. But the container has no value unless you place things in it for it to protect and serve. So the trust is this place where you can put your real estate, you can put financial assets, you can put a lot of other things. And you need to take care of those things about the same time you create the trust. If you create the trust and then set it on the shelf and say, you know, I'm going to get around to putting my stuff in that, often it doesn't happen. And those of you who have created a trust, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 10 years ago, now's a good time to pull that out and see if you've retitled real estate. Real estate particularly is something that people often overlook. If you've changed the title on bank accounts that you wanted in your trust, brokerage accounts, any other financial assets that you want in your trust.
Always good to review and update.
Yeah, review that. Because keep in mind, if you spent $2,000, $3,000, whatever you may have spent for that trust, it does you no good unless you put assets in it. Now, let me issue a caveat here. Don't just go out indiscriminately and grab your assets and stick them in the trust. Some things you may not want in the trust for tax reasons. For example, tax-deferred assets like 401k or an IRA, you may decide that you don't want in the trust so that you get some benefits for the beneficiary when you pass away. And you may lose some of those if you put those items in the trust. So just follow the advice of your lawyer regarding what items go in the trust. The general rule should be they go in the trust. That's the general rule. But
now,
you need to know the exceptions.
For those items that you would not put in the trust, like a 401k, how do you go about leaving that to someone?
Well, that's a good question. So you have a beneficiary clause on your title accounts.
Okay.
And so those beneficiary clauses essentially direct who is to get that. And the good news is, incidentally, when you have those beneficiary clauses in those accounts, they're not going to go through probate. They don't go directly to that person. So so at least you get the benefit of avoiding that whole inexpensive process for those assets.
So it's just like a beneficiary deed with a home.
Yeah.
If you go that route.
Yeah, that's a good analogy.
Okay.
So so the things that you want in the trust, be sure and put in the trust, because remember, that's where you've set up the rules for you want your assets to go here under that condition. Maybe you want, as to some people such as grandchildren, you want them to be held in trust for a while. A lot of people don't want to simply send stuff directly to their kids in hopes that they'll eventually make it to their grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
It's not at all cynical for parents and none of our clients in particular to conclude, you know, I really want this to go to my grandkids, and the best way to do that is to put it in the trust and direct it for the grandkids at some point later. And you decide that, as opposed to simply having it go into a custodial account, which will have someone placed in charge of it. And it's a vehicle where you can't have much control, and you've got to dispense the money at certain ages, whether it's 18 or 21,
right,
depending on whether or not it's a Uniform Gift to Minors Act. So a trust is far, far better than that, because you set the rules, you set the ages, and you choose the people that you want to be in charge without regard to whether or not it's a parent, and the fact that the child's a minor doesn't impair your ability to do that.
Good point.
So trusts are huge, hugely helpful. But again, be sure that if you have a trust, that you do have it properly funded. And if you don't have a trust, think about it. Another thing that whenever you think about estate planning, some people fail to consider is there is a thing called a durable power of attorney for health care. Now, that's a little different from the durable power of attorney. Now, you can have those two documents attached to each other. You can even place the same person in charge. So both of those are critical, especially for those people who think they're vulnerable to some sort of serious illness, such as the case that's going on now.
And that allows someone else to make health care decisions for you, correct?
Yes. Durable power of attorney for health care. Now, there are various devices. Some people have what's called a health care or medical directive. Medical directive is very similar. It's speaking to whoever is the provider of care. It directs them as to what they can and can't do. That's a little bit of a different point from having a document in which you empower a particular person to make those decisions. I like the durable power of attorney for healthcare because it's somebody that you know, that you trust their judgment,
right,
that you trust their values. And let's face it, you can't create sufficiently precise definitions to be able to simply rule out the discretion to where you can say, fine, it doesn't matter who it is because I'm going to have specific instructions here. So whether it's a hospital's attorneys or whether it's a doctor or a nurse or whoever it might be that's reading this document, it's going to be real clear as to the specific circumstances I want this or that done. That's not the nature of healthcare mm-hmm. circumstances. We all know that. So it's naive to believe that you can separate discretion from this document. Somebody's judgment and values are going to have to come into play in the lines between what you have authorized and what you haven't authorized. There's just going to be a gap there that's going to require judgment. And for that reason, there is this thing called a durable power of attorney for health care. And many people simply have what's called a healthcare directive. Now, that's more commonly you see that device as what happens when you go in for care into a hospital. So when you're admitted now, almost universally, somebody sticks one of these forms under your nose and,
yeah,
and you sign it. So that's what you're signing. So I encourage people to recognize that it's probably not adequate for their needs. And there's going to be some blurriness as to a particular circumstance, whether it's permitted or not. And for that reason, I suggest you choose the person whose judgment you most respect and create that durable power of attorney for healthcare. You can have a panel. You can have a healthcare panel. But I suggest it be an odd number if they're each going to vote.
That's a good point.
Yeah. You don't want a hung jury in a situation like that. So anyway, another thing we would add then to the list is a durable power of attorney for health care.
Good point. And as you said, you can have more than one person on that.
You can. And the same thing applies, incidentally, for the durable power of attorney generally, is some people do think that perhaps a panel of their children is going to make better decisions than any one of their children. Or sometimes, quite frankly, it's more a concern about the sensibilities of the people involved. I've had more than one client say to me that, yeah, Jimmy, my younger son, would be the better person, but Tommy is older and that would really hurt his feelings. So I feel like I can't leave Tommy out. So, I'm always reluctant to see a client for reasons like that place Tommy in charge.
Right, right.
And so often the solution is to list both of them and hope that there's not a disagreement. But even then, you can have a tie-breaking scenario. So you could have, in that circumstance, a decision that in the event that there's disagreement, you name a third party to break it. So there's so many variations in which you can determine whether or not this is important.
And that third party, could that be another family member, or could this even be, say, the attorney?
It could be anybody, yeah. It needs to be somebody that can be easily accessed, though, because, I mean, when these come up, it can be 11 o'clock at night where you need a decision or access to financial resources, et cetera, particularly for somebody traveling internationally.
Right.
Because of the time zones. So I think it's important to have somebody that you know you can reach 24/7 in some way. But whenever you think about whether or not this is going to go into effect or how it's going to go into effect, it's important for people to recognize another option that exists. And we've talked before on the show about springing durable powers of attorney. But some people like those. I'm not as much a fan of those. What that means is that the device is not in effect immediately. So this panel that you've chosen, whether it's two people and a third party who's a tiebreaker, or you have three kids and they each have a vote, or even it's one person, the question becomes, do you want them to have that ability from the moment you sign it, or do you want some event to occur? And that event would be some event that would define incapacity.
Right, right.
So you could simply have that, too, determined by a panel of your kids. You could have it determined by a single doctor that you trust. You could require a signature of two separate doctors that you don't even know, meaning you're not prescribing who those doctors will be. You're just saying, two doctors have to say this. All those things create just an additional hurdle. Now, some people say, I'm okay with the hurdle because I don't want to give somebody this sort of power early on. But I can tell you that if you have that discomfort with them while you are not incapacitated, in other words, you think they may take advantage of you or some other malfeasance could occur when you're perfectly competent, then you have to wonder whether you can entrust them when you're not competent.
Right.
So I think what I like to think of this is as an exercise to determine who it is that you truly can trust. And then give them the power. Don't create that additional hurdle to slow down the progress that needs to happen under these circumstances. Often it's important that things move quickly and smoothly. And this can often bring things to a stop because a third party may not be comfortable giving the person you've chosen, for example, access to your bank account because that person has told this clerk, this teller, that you're incompetent. So the teller's nervous, so it ends up going to the lawyer up on the 30th floor, who's going to be in at 9:30 or 10 the next morning, and they're going to be nervous. So I'm not saying there's no occasion when you should have this springing provision in your durable power of attorney, but I'm suggesting that it may be better to not have that additional barrier and instead choose carefully the person that you want to be in charge in the event you become sick.
You want somebody you can trust, somebody that's dependable, and that will hit the ground running, in the event that something does happen.
Which is another argument for against panels, too, is panels, too, can slow things down.
Yeah.
Just for logistical reasons.
Right.
So just considerations for durable power of attorney. But we feel that today's show, our focus has been on things related to the coronavirus because we know it's on your mind. We know it's relevant. It's not simply panicking on the part of older people especially, I think it's wise for them to take steps now for greater safety and to pull some of those documents off the shelf that they think may be what they need now, but they're not sure. Or if they know they don't have those things, maybe now's the time to go ahead and do it. We'll wrap up with reminding you that Tucker Allen, purely as a public service, there's no charge for this. Tucker Allen is prepared to provide a durable power of attorney to anybody who comes to the office with some identification on Monday morning. And this is the office at 40 and 141 on Kelwood. If they come between 9 and 11 a.m. on Monday morning without charge, you'll see a lawyer. There'll be a notary present, and you'll leave there with a durable power of attorney. This is just Tucker Allen's way of trying to show its commitment, to demonstrate its commitment to the elder community in St. Louis area.
And again, that address is 600 Kelwood Parkway, Suite 300.
Good. This has been another episode of Elder Talk. Till next week, take care.
You've been listening to Elder Talk with Tucker Allen, providing intelligent answers for those thinking about their future with attorney CPA Joe Cordell. Sponsored by Tucker Allen, your estate and elder law advisors. For more information, visit TuckerAllen.com. Listen again next Saturday for another edition of Elder Talk with Tucker Allen. The choice of a lawyer is an important decision and should not be based solely on advertisements.